I actually lost my oldest son. He was 23. It was actually March of 2016. He was murdered by a person who had a handgun. That night, my son was with one of his friends that got a call from a sister and was saying that his dad was about to beat up on their mom, and she wanted her brother to come to the house, which the brother was with my son. The son pretty much was saying, like, you know, like, he's tired of his dad actually, you know, doing this to his mom, and he wanted to go over to the house to kind of, like, intervene with this situation. So my son went with him. It was him and another young man had went with him to the house. In the process of the son confronting his father, the father went and got the gun and came out and was shooting and shot my son, who actually never entered the house. He was in the doorway, and I found that out through the trial and everything, that he was in the doorway, so he never entered the house. They found his body basically a couple houses down away from the location in which he was actually killed. My son ran out of the house, so like, you know, that adrenaline rush that happens, like that fight or flight. And during the trial, there was no remorse. Like he actually blamed it on his son, so he had no accountability. He actually had previous gun charges. I actually told the court, like, during the sentencing, is that, you know, basically your system allowed him opportunities to finally kill somebody, because he was a convicted felon that wasn't supposed to have a possession of a firearm prior to that incident. The third time you have a possession of a firearm, you finally kill somebody. He ended up getting 20 years stay inside and then 15 years extended supervision. My grandson grows up without a father, which the house was different. When you came home, you knew there was a big void in that house. Like, it took me a while to go through, like, his clothes. Like, I waited for his brother. It was probably a little over a year before I actually donated items to the victim in shelter. It was difficult to process. There's still times where I can drive down the street and I see people who, like, physically have, like, a stature like him. And you have, like, a moment where you just kind of come out of reality and you think, like, oh my God, that's him. And then, you know, then all of a sudden reality kicks back in. It's just like, no, it can't be him. I feel like we operate in silos as individuals here. And not just, I don't want to say it's just exclusively Milwaukee, but what I've learned, I participated in a support group, a grief support group for parents as a whole who have lost their children through violence. For me, that was the first time that I actually felt like with my circumstance that I was not alone. It was one, sadness because you know why they were there. And then two was the relief knowing that I'm not the only one. Because you feel like you are the only one going through that situation when you are going through it. What I've learned about grief is that depending on the loss, how you process that and the grief kind of flows a little differently. But there's something about finding someone who has a similar experience to you that creates a vulnerability and a connection that allows you to, it helps with the grief process actually, you know, and having someone that's there that actually gets it. I would say that if we could start to come out of the silos, it will help our community as a whole be able to move forward from the things that we're struggling with. There was a Swedish sociologist by the name of Bernard Kratz for Cafe Mortals. And sociologists know that one of the things that connects us as human beings is food, socialization and food. So it was like, bring them together with some sweet treats and we could talk about our mortality, which kind of creates people a little bit of vulnerability. So John Underwood got a gist of that and said, you know what, I need to bring that to our country, something that we can definitely benefit from. And I came across it and said, I need to bring that to our community because it's something we could benefit from. So basically, I love it, the format, because there's no agenda. It's not getting people to walk away and saying, well, I have to resolve to do this today, or, you know, come and have plans to, you know, like, to make something different or create some type of action behind it. But what happens is that people have conversations that get you thinking. It allows you to be open. It allows you to be vulnerable to talk about a topic that people typically don't want to talk about, which is death. But then there's the underlying motive about that is to allow people to understand that one day we're all going to leave this earth. But what do we do with the moments that we have left here? We have an opportunity to make memories. We have an opportunity to leave a legacy. We have an opportunity to create an impact. What do we do with the time that we have left? So to be able to create space for people, like, I love, it's just the fact that we get to create space for people to come together and be able to talk about something that we know everyone's not comfortable talking about. And cake is actually part of one of the requirements that you have to have either cake or cookies or some type of dessert treat for the attendees of Death Cafe. So I'm like, wow, like really cake? Like, I love cake. So, you know, I'm quite sure there's other people who will just come for the cake, you know. But truthfully, come for the cake and stay for the conversation, because you don't know where, you know, your thought process might be. Or you might be sitting in a room with someone who's actually saying exactly what you're thinking. And like I said, just to be able to hold space for people to be able to do that is just an awesome thing.